Good Friday afternoon. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Thing Socolow Village Studio. It's September 1st. We're rushing toward fall, and it actually kind of looks like that out there, Tom. It's overcast, a little bit of rain, and it's rather beautiful. So I'm Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News, Sabadita Sun.
Did you say a little bit of rain?
Up here in Tucson, we got drenched down in Green Valley and Sabadita, I'll tell you that.
National Weather Service is saying expect to get drenched again later this afternoon.
Oh, great. And I think it's through Sunday. So, hey, we'll take it. We'll take it. So Bill is going to be back at it next week after the Labor Day weekend. On Fridays, Bill gives a high five to the Buckmaster Show media partners. They include TucsonSentinel.com, Green Valley News, Sabadita Sun, Tucson Local Media, and Tucson Weekly. You're going to find all of those and more on his website, BuckmasterShow.com. In our Friday Focus interview today, we're going to be talking with Carew Peppertz. He is very interested and very knowledgeable in artificial intelligence, that's AI, and everything from the classroom to the movie sets. That's what we're going to focus on today. If you've got a question or comment anytime during the show, call us at 520-790-2040. That's the Buckmaster Show live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We now welcome Carew Peppertz. Great to see you.
Great to be on the show, Dan. Thank you.
Great. I got to kid you about this just because I do. Earlier this year, you were on the Kelly Clarkson show. Now she's a former American Idol winner, and I thought she had long faded, and apparently she has into daytime TV talk show genres. Why were you on there?
I was, yeah. She called me up and said, Carew, I would love you on the show. And I says, Kelly, I can't refuse. No, our local school, Continental Elementary, which I'm a huge supporter of, we created National Thank You Letter Day about 5 years ago. We created the world's largest handwritten thank you letter, the size of a high school basketball gym.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually then created the world's largest envelope, world's largest stamp, sent it through the post office. And as a result, we received a Guinness World Record, for which Kelly heard about through the proverbial grapevine.
3 years later,
yeah.
Kelly, this just in, well, as we say in the business.
There was a little bit of a COVID delay with Guinness and then with Kelly. And she was a sweetheart. It was lovely to be back.
Great.
And I think the interesting thing for your readers, I used to work in the film industry and actually had worked at that stage that Kelly was at. So I had come full circle, and it was a hoot and a half. But she's a sweetheart, like I said, and it was great to be on her show.
Well, you look great on there, and it's always great to promote Green Valley Continental School, everything that's going on there. And it was a terrific story. We had several articles in our paper about it. It was a lot of fun. So, well, the topic at hand is AI, it's artificial intelligence. We're going to talk about it in at least two contexts, as I mentioned, education and the movie industry, and you have experience in both. Just a little bit of background for our listeners. ChatGPT was released in November last year, and everybody's pretty much stunned by what it could do. You feed a request or information into a program, and it spits out some incredible stuff. Suddenly students were writing long informative essays, test scores skyrocketed, math grades went up, and while that sounds great, they weren't, I think, learning anything other than how to feed words into a program that gives them the answers. In essence, it was cheating, I think. So Carew, first of all, explain AI, ChatGPT, and then we'll move on from there.
Okay. I'm going to do the tongue twister version of ChatGPT, which is chat generated pre-trained, I forgot the last of it.
T.
Transformer.
Very good. So yes. Probably the first time a lot of these people have ever heard what GPT stands for, by the way.
Absolutely. And what is that? So that is a natural language based processor that helps us have human-like conversations with your computer via the internet. And so, like Dan was referring to, you can go to ChatGPT, you can go on Bing, or you can go through Google. And again, you can talk to your computer, ask it questions like, I'm hungry, what should I eat tonight? My dog is losing its fur. You know, is the world coming to an end and are you real? And it will answer. And actually you can choose the conversational mode, whether you want formal or otherwise, and it makes it seem as if you are talking to a real human being.
Scary stuff, because it was released less than a year ago, ChatGPT was, but already it has improved. Fewer mistakes, and as it had been kind of knocked for early on, although there have been like two or three other versions of it released by various companies that have not done nearly as well or not nearly as accurate, but they'll get there. So we've got to get used to this thing being around.
Yeah, but there's an interesting, so we keep talking about the dark side, so there's some interesting plus sides too.
Sure.
But one of the fascinating things that's come about recently is that the computer scientists are finding that each iteration, each level that it keeps learning from, the problem is now it's starting to learn wrong, because there's mistakes within the system. So each iteration is learning the mistakes from the last. So for example, what the AI does is they're called LLMs, large language models, and basically they sweep the entire internet with all this knowledge, pull it together in this form that you can access in real time. And so the first sweep is the purest sweep. It's literally the one without any mistakes in it. And then what happens is AI learns from each iteration, each level before it. And if there's mistakes in it, it complicates that. And now what they're finding is that there's more and more and more and more mistakes, and they have to save the original copy of all the knowledge from the original version. So it's interesting. One can say, well, are they going to figure it out? They should be able to figure it out, but it could. They're in a bit of a bollocks right now.
Well, so really ChatGPT is only as good as the information it's drawing from, which is all created by humans. And is that what you're saying, is that errors can be introduced that way?
Errors can be introduced by AI introducing them into the system.
So, okay, I get it.
So when you ask a question and it gets the question wrong or whatever, it's learning, but it's also learning the wrong response, putting it back into the system, and that creates an error loop.
Okay.
Essentially.
Okay, so you talked about looking at the positive side, but let's look at what teachers and universities and, you know, public schools, everybody was looking at early on, which was, we'll just ban this stuff.
Yeah.
We're
going
to ban it. That lasted about 10 minutes, I think, before they realized, yeah, I know you're not going to be able to do that. So banning ChatGPT, which some schools did, just doesn't work. But now schools have taken the approach, how can we use this to help kids learn rather than just cheat?
Well, this is like right in my wheelhouse. I love this because I'm a big fan of teaching kids, getting them excited about reading and learning. So, and I love handwriting, of course, and I love teaching handwriting. So I was really excited because I heard a professor at Princeton had said to his class, we're not doing ChatGPT. You're going to write all your papers by hand in class. And I was like, yeah, look, it's going to bring back handwriting.
Cursive's coming back.
Cursive's
folks.
Coming
yeah, if they, yeah, they'll have to learn it first. So, oh, brother.
So, but to your question, so an interesting aspect of that is, I guess the first one that I came, or the epiphany I had one day, was that we are, first and foremost, I think that AI and ChatGPT is the greatest plagiarizer in the world.
Sure.
I mean, think about that. They're sweeping the entire internet of all this information that we put out there. And so we have to talk to kids about plagiarism. And the question comes up then, well, do they care about plagiarism? I mean, I think this is one of the things you're
right.
going to talk about.
Right.
And I'm saying, no, they have been brought up with copy, paste, put it down. And so no one is telling them about the importance of quote unquote cheating, because what? They do it all the time. It's normal to grab information off the internet. Why? Because it's free. We've been taught it's free.
Right. But how is that different than back in fifth grade when I'm doing a report on Switzerland and I pull an encyclopedia off the shelf and I'm reading about, you know, gross domestic product and their language and religion and all that type of stuff and putting it down on paper? Is it really that much different?
I just think it's the ease with which you can get away from it, because if you're a third grader taking mm-hmm. information off of an Encyclopedia Britannica and putting in there, your teacher's going to know. And now the teachers are trying to figure out, and the percentage rate at which they can figure it out, there was like a series of about 20 or 30 professors looked at ChatGPT university papers, and only about 50% of the time could they get it figured out.
Right, and yeah. I think that those detectors are not nearly as good as people thought they were, or they're just they just don't work. Those yeah. AI detector programs and stuff.
So. Another great story on that. A gal at Stanford, I think, she told her teachers that she was going to write this paper. She did. She was an English major or something. Perfectly written paper. Passed it through the detector. The mm-hmm. detector said, you didn't write this. So now you're getting these false positives, and how do you prove yourself right against all of AI? And so now it's another interesting issue.
And so how can we, in classrooms, let's just say yeah. a high school, how can they deal with something like that? Is it more in-class work? Is it more discussions? And then as kids feed into the discussion, you can see what they know or don't know. Is it tests done a different way? The old blue books from college where, you know, you're writing down in class, you know, the essay questions and everything. Is it going to come to that?
I think some parts of it are. I think the way that education is going is that it's less for those teachers and for those schools that are much more integrative in their learning and what they want to teach their kids, as opposed to linear memorization, that type of route. This provides an interesting opportunity. For example, to come back to your point, is let's say we ask, what's the gross domestic, how does Switzerland deal with X, mm-hmm. Y, and Z, or slavery? There's a great one. You sure. want to bring that one up. And ChatGPT spits out a response, and guess what? We get to respond to that response. So I think what it does is generate, that's the better part of it, if we actually are sitting down having discussions about, I don't think this is appropriate. I don't think this is right. I don't think this is whatever the computer response is. So I think that's one way that you can use ChatGPT in or AI in a classroom that might start to generate discussions about, I mean, one of the biggest concerns about AI is creating disinformation
all
over the place. So,
exactly.
So if we're going to create good, quote unquote, citizens, we have to be able to discern what is correct and what isn't.
But this has got to be such a challenge just to the education system and how teachers approach their job and making sure that kids actually learn something. But if I'm a kid and I feed something into ChatGPT and it spits out a paper for me, I am going to read the paper. So I guess you could say I'm going to learn something by reading that, but I'm also passing it off as my own work, which is plagiarism. And I don't know that kids really care about that. Now, I know some do. I'm not painting them all with the same brush.
Yeah, so it's interesting about discussing that. So I liken it to the human body needs to move. So if we wanted to, if we could take a pill and that would make us naturally healthy and all worked in as if we were in a gym, that would be great. But it doesn't. And the human brain is the same way. It needs to exercise and it needs to learn how to get into shape. So writing does that. And what does writing do? It teaches you how to think. Those are the fundamentals of that. And it's like my son who's now a senior in high school. He goes, why do I have to take that class? You know, it's useless. I mean, that's the classic, you know, and you're like, yeah, but it's good for you, you know, mm-hmm. and you're in the long run. Yeah. And try to have that conversation where this is the reason why you need to learn how to write, because if you get caught with your proverbial writing pants down and someone says, I need this, you're not going to be able to do it. And guess what? It's also teaching you how to communicate, right? I mean, that's the we're talking about fundamental layers of how to communicate effectively and well, and we need that more than ever, and this will make that less than ever.
Well, in part, you're talking about discovering the joy of learning, and which I did at one point. When you're interested in something, it's real easy. But when you're just trying to graduate from high school and you're out, but you know, you're going to do what needs to be done. We'll talk a little bit more about how teachers can really harness the power of of AI in the classroom, you know, specifically as we continue our conversation. We are in the midst of our Friday Focus interview with Karoo Papritz. You're listening to the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Socolo Village Studio. Our live line is made possible by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And this is the portion of the Buckmaster Show that is presented by Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's is on the northeastern corner of Swan and Sunrise. It's open Tuesday through Sunday for breakfast and lunch. Treat yourself to their mouth-watering pastries, including that famous Danish Kringle Bill and so many of us love. Mona'sDanishBakery.com. Learn everything you need to know about them, or go to BuckmasterShow.com for a link to Mona's Danish Bakery. We'll be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com. Nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Dan Shear, sitting in for Bill. I'm with Karoo Papritz, and we're talking about AI, that's artificial intelligence. And we had talked a little bit about this earlier. You had mentioned something from out of Stanford, but ChatGPT actually went to college this past spring semester at Harvard, no less. It did the same assignments as the students and ended up with a 3.57 GPA. Which I'd have taken any day in college. Okay, so not bad at Harvard. We know Harvard is a bastion of grade inflation, but still, 3.57 at an Ivy League school is not bad. And professors remarked about ChatGPT how, this is a quote from one of them, well-written and well-articulated paper. And one said, it's beautifully written. It's out there. It's everywhere. But how can teachers, Karoo Papritz, how can teachers make AI work for students? And that's a tough one.
Here's the tough one. Like you said, we're still in the forefront of trying to figure this out. and the great fear that teachers have of how to incorporate in the classroom effectively. One of the things that both you and I had talked about recently was the idea that it might lessen the teacher's workload, the paper load, and this is the perfunctory stuff that goes in. For example, if you're a math teacher and you can feed the test results into the computer, and the computer gets it right back, and all of a sudden you're done, rather than spending, you know, an hour at night grading exams from one of six classes in front of the television, much like my parents did. Mm-hmm. You know, you feed it in the computer, it's done, and all of a sudden that workload's off your back. But in terms of the learning aspect, that's the key thing. I think we can talk more about the idea of what is AI feeding us, and again, how to recognize the disinformation or the errors that it's making. And I think that would teach us how to think and have that conversation, because I'm all about communication. I'm all about learning how to have that conversation about what's wrong with this or what's right with this. And I think that's a great thing to teach kids.
But you're also about character and integrity. And could all this just come down to that?
Yeah, isn't that fascinating?
I think character is going to take a battering, though.
Yeah, I think so. I think so, too. But that's an interesting conversation to have. Like, you sit down and with your kids and say, good, look, you can do this.
Sure.
Go ahead, copy. But guess what? In the long run, you know you're going to be copying, and this is what character is about, and you can have the conversation about character. And for those people that it actually does reach, and you can say, hey, in the long run, it's not going to work. It's going to backfire on you, no matter what. And so, yeah, that's an interesting conversation to have, what plagiarism really means.
Well, we're going to shift the focus to AI and the movie industry, because you have a lot of experience over there. But first, I want to give you a chance to plug your book, The Legacy Letters, because it has such an important message, and it keeps delivering long after it's been published. I've read it. It's a wonderful book. Can you tell us more about it?
Yeah, The Legacy Letters. A little bit of a backstory on that. I worked in the film industry, and I became disillusioned with the bright lights and the glamour and all this. And I actually, lock, stock, and barrel, left it, roamed around the West, and ended up working as a cowboy in a local ranch here in southern Arizona. I actually came back to my roots. My granddad had a ranch when I was growing up. And it was fascinating because I sort of had an early midlife crisis. I always said, if you're going to have them early. And I set about picking up the pen again. I'd written when I was younger. But this was a wonderful beginning. It was a series. So The Legacy Letters is a series of fictional letters written by a father to his kids he'd never lived to see. And these letters become their practical and moral spiritual guidebook for the rest of their lives. And it's won a number of national awards that I'm very proud of. But what's been fascinating as an author is the response of people who have read the letters, and they come back to me almost like a Rorschach test of, oh my gosh, you reminded me of what's important in life. You reminded me of whatever it may be relative to the letter itself. And after a while, I began to realize that it was less than an author, and I've become more of a messenger to my own words. And it's been a fascinating ride. It's been absolutely fascinating. So yeah.
It's a book that makes you slow down and think about what's important, and at least it did that for me. And so it was very introspective, pushes you that direction.
Yeah.
But I have to talk about the fun part of the book too, because you had the first signing on a glacier, first book signing. You had the first book signing in an English language bookstore in. Cuba?
In Cuba, right. Post-Castro. All these fun things.
Yeah, this is marketing, folks. Okay? And it was primo. So you were all over the place with this thing.
Yeah, no, that was fun. It was a result of air. I'm very, very fortunate to have done a great number of book signings all across the U.S. And
normal ones.
Yeah, normal ones, exactly. But I found myself, I love being outdoors. I love being active. And how do I combine the two? And so the first one I ever did was actually here in Tucson at the Barnes & Noble on Broadway. And I came in on horse, the horse that I actually worked on as a cowboy, and did a digital book signing on horseback, the first ever. And so I created these series of first ever book signings, and yes. I've done one on Mount St. Helens, Glacier in Alaska, on a whistle stop tour, and on the East Coast that was 3 weeks long. And there's more to come. So we're not done yet. But why? people say, why do you do this? And I say, it's because I get to walk the talk of the book, which is live life to the fullest.
There you go. The Legacy Letters, pick it up, go online, whatever. Do you have a website for that?
Yes, thelegacyletters.com.
Very good. Great stuff, worth taking a look at. And then again, one more thing quickly before we move on to the movie industry is we touched on it earlier, but disinformation and AI. AI is undoubtedly already has made us dumber, but the proliferation of bad information is only going to grow worse and more convincing because AI is very convincing. And so now bad information, and if people don't have the critical thinking skills to hear something and say, gosh, that just doesn't sound quite right, and then check it out, they're just going to swallow everything that comes their way.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing in classrooms. If there's one thing that teachers can do above all else to incorporate GPT is, or ChatGPT is, hey, is this real or is this not?
Right. And again, critical thinking.
Critical thinking.
Think about that and throw something out there outlandish at kids and adults, by the way. And we've seen a lot of it in the last, few years that's going on. And I realize, and everyone should realize, that these people who are putting out disinformation is, you know, they want clicks online. It's about money.
Yep.
And for some, it's about controlling a message, but misinformation is just being lapped up by people without questioning it. And I think AI is going to just make that worse because there's going to be a lot more. And as I said, it'll be a lot more believable.
Yeah.
So we'll see where it takes us. So Hollywood, movie industry, AI is really not new to Hollywood. We've seen actors age on screen before us. We've seen a lot of CGI, but how is AI and CGI similar or different?
Well, CGI was the predecessor to AI, in effect, which is the computer-generated imagery. And if you have all been brought up on the Disney films, mm-hmm. And you know which ones I'm talking about, the whole slew of them, a lot of those are computer-generated, and it's been remarkable what they can do. But AI, working with AI and CGI, it puts CGI on steroids, computer-generated imagery. And what you can do with AI is create hyper-realistic situations. And here's the scary part. We're not going to need actors anymore. Why? Because we can generate them, right?
Well, and how real? Because we've seen computer-generated people, and they still look like computer-generated people. But you say that maybe is it like a melding of real and AI that's going to make them more real? We're going to really believe this person's in front of us.
Well, I think that's what you buy into in the movie. For example, Avatar, which I'm sure you've seen many, many times.
I'll watch it this weekend. Yeah. I've never seen it, but I know it's about.
Right. And you watch it, and I'm still amazed at just the level of complexity and density of just the background. I mean, look at the water. I mean,
even came out a while ago, didn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, so I mean, well, better now. I mean, the first iteration, and the second one is just unreal. So, and that was done with, that was CGI, that was totally CGI with AI help. But I think we're just going to buy into the fact that these are computer-generated actors, and we're fine with that. I think that's our buy-in when we go to the movies.
So we really have to suspend something,
yeah.
Which common sense is often one of them in a lot of these movies. But yeah. This is the way. So you're saying that we could actually create stars of the future who are absolutely, you know, perfect, who really don't exist, but we think they do.
Sure, or let's flip in the other direction: stars of the past.
Okay.
So you want to bring Elvis back for another series of beach blanket, you know, bingo movies, or that Annette Funicello, or I'm dating myself.
And I'd rather not, but I get your point.
Yeah.
Well, and didn't they have, what was it, a hologram Michael Jackson or something on stage or whatever?
Oh, yeah. That's happening
now too. Yeah, so there's a lot of this thing, of this stuff going on. And when we get back, we're going to talk about the actor and writer strike and why they are very concerned about AI and the implications it could have on the industry. We are with Karu Peppert. So much to talk about after the break. We'll be right back on the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Socolow Village Studio.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Dan Shear, sitting in for Bill. We are with Karu Peppertz, and we're talking about artificial intelligence as it relates to education. And now we're moving on to the movie industry. And Karu, you have a lot of experience in the movie industry, know a lot of people there who've been affected by this. They went on strike, the actors and the writers, roughly 3-4 months ago, and we've all been watching that. Part of what they are upset about is the potential of AI basically to bump them out of jobs. Now, how would this affect a writer? And then we're going to get to the actors, because the actor part, I don't quite understand how they can be bumped out of a job. But the writers, I get it.
Yeah.
No more scripts.
Yeah, or AI-generated scripts, right?
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. You just...
We don't need humans.
Yeah.
Great.
And there it is.
Then they're going to come after Bill Buckmaster in this show, you know, so they will never be able to replace
him. And the
it.
Emperor has no clothes, and you finally said what needed to be said. Exactly. No more humans. Oh, gosh. Well, so the writer part of this, because if you can take a 60-minute show, which is reduced to 48 minutes because of commercials, and it has to hit four, you know, plot points along the way, and you say, I want a young girl going off with a man, and I want him to da 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 da, and I want him to end up being married. Can you backtrack that? And we want it in Spain during the 1930s, and all of a sudden, it can generate an entire script, good or bad. It was fascinating. The Alan Alda of MASH fame,
yes,
just had a script done by AI for a MASH episode that never existed, and... It was wild because he said it couldn't get the comedy timing right.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, but it's a real thing, and producers are going, oh, if we don't have to pay those darn pesky writers who are always coming up with and complaining about trying to make deadlines and being creative. I mean, wouldn't you love it as a producer? Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Well, and is it so wrong that they want to cut costs? Let's be honest here. Hollywood has cut costs many ways over the years, and isn't that the companies we work for? And if you own your own business, you always want to cut costs.
Yeah, but the movie industry is such a different beast. So if... And what a lot of people don't realize is writing is literally the heart and soul of the movie industry. You cannot have a script, you cannot have a TV show, you cannot have live TV without writers. The writers write this, and people spews out. I mean, this does not come off the top of people's head. So so it's absolutely essential that you have writers and you pay them well. But to your point, for example, the median income for writers in Hollywood is about $50,000.
Yeah, and if you live in California, that's just not going to get you very far.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and I know a lot of these guys.
So, yeah. So were you saying earlier then that humans can do stuff that AI can't?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. For now. Maybe in a year we have this conversation and...
I wonder. That's the key part, isn't it? Because basically all AI is doing is replicating what it has seen before.
So if I'm writing fiction, all of the life events I've been through, people I've met, places I've been, experiences, will all go into producing that piece of writing. But so will personal creativity, curiosity, things like that. AI may take all the internet experiences, as you are saying, and make a document or a script or a book. But doesn't it lack these human traits that take a good script to great?
I'm biased.
So you say yes, but yes. Is that hope or is that, yeah, that's really the case?
I think it's a bit of both. I mean, if you take a look at a lot of the stuff that's being churned out on TV, the sort of the pablum stuff, I mean, I'll tell you, I could not watch General Hospital if I knew it was AI generated.
How could you watch it anyway? No, I get it.
No, but it's interesting because that element, that is the human element, the quirkiness, the voice, all those things. Can AI replicate? Sure, can replicate it, but can it replicate it in a way where you buy it? Up to a point, I'm sure, but ultimately, look, but let's go back to feature films. Feature films cost $60 to $100 million now to produce.
Yeah.
So are you going to bank on an AI-produced script, or AI produces it and writers rewrite an AI-produced script? That's a thing that's starting to happen.
Would that be insulting to a Hollywood writer?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Think about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they'd take the job.
Sure.
Okay. And really, you know what? It's not so much is it believable or can I, you know, is it close enough to what a human would do or whatever, but people tend to lower their standards sometimes when it's all that is offered to them. And they'll say, yeah, it may not be the best, but it still has cars blowing up and people leaping building to building, and that's good enough for me.
Yeah, and I think what's a great story is still a great story, and how to generate one is important. So after a while, I think what'll happen is you're going to get, once again, this feedback, this loop with AI that creates less and less interesting stories. You think, oh, can you create more interesting stories? No, because you're only learning how to create the story you created. And unless you have outside input, right? Unless you have something that goes into the system that's new, you're going to create the same thing over and over. And producers are going to have to say, well, gosh, we need some pushback. We need some new
Well, maybe
creativity.
We're going to know that AI is embraced if this happens. And this is actually from Tom, where he is asking the question of whether an AI generated script could actually maybe win an Oscar someday.
Yeah.
Once that happens, it's all over.
The cat's out of the bag at that point. Thanks, Tom.
Yeah.
Jeez, we were on a roll there. I was feeling good about being a human being, and now it's.
Well, and isn't that the truth that we know AI can generate, you know, art, write stories, play video games better than the best people on Earth? It can mimic voices and carry on conversations. Why don't we just roll over and call it quits as humans?
Yeah, there's a certain amount of that, isn't there?
Like, there's an awful lot of that.
Yeah.
I mean.
So, and then how do you put the genie back in the bottle? How do you say, like I said, my only hope is that this thing is, well, hey, the other day the Air Force used a simulation with AI of a pilot going down and has got to blow up this depot in enemy territory and gets information to the contrary, like this is going on politically, you probably shouldn't do this. AI said, no, we need to kill the pilot because the pilot isn't going to carry out the mission.
Mm-hmm.
So, holy cow, now you have the human element of making a life, a human choice that is that you have to weigh, where AI goes, no, you were supposed to carry out the mission, and because you didn't, we have to kill you in the simulation.
Well, and if AI is so so smart, which it is, it does create scenarios perhaps for training law enforcement or military that we can't even think about that might be beneficial. I mean, there's huge benefits to this. Cost cutting, it's going to be accurate. I mean, there's, and again, I don't want to be trashing AI here totally. And I got to be honest with you, some part of me just thinks that what I want to do is watch the best movie. I don't care who wrote it.
Oh.
Yeah. Just blurt it out. I know.
This is the hour of truth. I don't have that serum on my side, so.
Well, I mean, isn't it true? I mean, you know.
Yeah, of course not. You're not going to say, oh, that was a, well, that's an interesting thing, too. You know, if you have the imprimatur and this is an AI-generated film, I mean, it may come down like, oh, fine, I'll watch an AI-generated film or an AI-written film.
Right.
Right? They're going to have to, people are going to have to start putting that.
You think so?
Oh, I think so. I know the Authors Guild is starting to say, you know, you write this, you need to say it was AI generated.
We in the newspaper industry are dealing with that, and we will disclose, of course, that part of something was researched or from AI. And I'm talking about a lot of it would be like marketing copy and whatever. We're not doing news stories that way or anything. But you and I talked earlier about if it's going out and grabbing the stuff off the internet, a lot of it could be copyrighted. Is that going to slow AI in the future or bring it to a stop dead in its tracks?
I mean, how could it? I don't know. How do you deal with it now? I mean, it's just the overwhelming use of copyrighted material. I mean, with like Google Books, and that just took forever to undo, and it's still not undone.
Okay, so are you saying how would you prove it?
Yeah, or then how would, okay, A, prove it, B, enforce it.
Right.
And then you're, yeah, nobody's going to go down that road.
Okay, so where do you think this is going to, where do you think you see us in a year with AI and Hollywood? Do you think it'll be worked out, or what? Do you really think that producers who now want to make movies for 40,000 to 60,000 rather than 60 to 100, million. Are going to say, okay, we'll just, you know, we'll throw an extra 20-30 million at a movie because we don't want to upset the writers? Do you really think that's going to happen?
No. Well, okay, so we've got to go back really quick and just talk about how movies a producer or a director says that we need to put that on the screen. What does that mean? We want to put the money on the screen. 30-35% of a movie is below the line. That means it's the actual production of making the movie. Another 10-15% goes to the actors. Another 10-15% goes to the producers. Writers are just like, they're 0.05. They're nothing. This is not affecting the overall budget of films by any stretch of the imagination.
Then why isn't Hollywood just saying, okay, writers, we'll give you this point? Because they don't seem to be giving them any ground when it comes to AI-generated scripts, potentially.
No, because they don't want to give any ground whatsoever. And there's another great example. I was in a producer's program in film school at UCLA. That's where I sort of made my bones there before I got into the industry. And I got to talk with the CEO of Paramount, and he goes, look, we make 30-35 films a year. And he said, 30%, he says, 10 of those films are going to flop. 10 of those films are going to break even. 5 of those films are going to make maybe 20%. And 5 films are going to cover our entire nut, our entire overhead.
Wow.
That's huge. So once again, it is still a roll of the dice in a very, very interesting creative realm. But the money that writers, they don't make hardly anything. And with streaming, Now, streaming has reduced that. Sure. And that's a whole nother conversation.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's been explained to us, and I can fully understand where they're coming from when it comes to that. So you say that you have some friends still in the industry.
Yep.
And what are you hearing as far as AI specifically?
Yeah, they're spooked. Yeah.
They
because,
are.
I mean, look how hard it is just to make it as is. I mean, you've got a 20% chance of making it as an actor, as a writer, in this, any part of Hollywood. AI's there, and it puts you, I mean, I don't know. It's interesting. And the producers have to say, well, gosh, are we just going to kill the goose that laid the golden egg, which are the writers and the people that bring this the very heart and soul? I don't know. That's going to be the $10 million AI question next year.
Yeah, well, a lot of thinking going on in Hollywood, and a lot of, I can just tell you, I think they're always going to go the path of that's going to save them money on it. And if they have to have this so-called collateral damage of writers, they will do it. So
yeah.
You brought up an interesting stat earlier. I think it was off the air, but it was it was old, but I bet it's still there. About 15% of people in Hollywood who are actors make enough to live on.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I think you came back and said, yeah, I think that's a high.
Yeah. I thought that was a high number.
That's a high number. And
everyone's an actor.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Or a screenwriter or whatever the case may be. Yeah. It's not a lot. It's a very, very difficult industry to get in. I do think in the long haul, I think that they're going to win out, and win out in a positive way, because that creative force that makes us want to see movies, I don't think that's going to ever go away. And the best creative minds, they come up with these fantastic plots and ideas, and you know, we want to see human beings be human.
Yeah, that's a great way to end this. I want to thank Karu Peppertz for joining us. And again, where can people find out more about you?
Probably the best way is just Google. Yeah,
he's everywhere.
Use AI and go on. Where is Karu Peppertz today? And they'll tell you.
TheLegacyLetters.com,
or just go to Amazon and check it out. But it's been great being on the show, Dan.
Very good. We'll be right back with Weekend Watch to help you plan your next few days. Remember, it's a long Labor Day weekend coming up. Don't forget, our live line is made possible by the pros over at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We'll be back in a minute.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
It is time for the Weekend Watch, a great way to plan your next few days, presented by our friends in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. They're just 3 hours east of Tucson, and there's a lot to do in Silver City and Grant County, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness and visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. I can spit that out. Find more about what to do and where to stay at southwestnewmexico.org. And on the line here, we've got Matt Russell. Matt, we're heading into a three-day Labor Day weekend.
We sure are, and I promise not to say cliff dwellings. I'm going to leave that to professionals.
You know, I was doing the show on Monday, and right out of the gate, the very first word I spoke, I screwed up. And I thought, this is going to be a long hour, baby. And it was. I was right. I was absolutely right. Okay, so what's going on here?
Well, you know, the Fenton family's footprint on the downtown dining scene has expanded this week, Dan, and with the addition of their brand new rooftop, which sits high atop Riley Craft Pizza and Drink on East Pennington Street. Now, this high-altitude urban overlook opens today at 6 o'clock, weather permitting, of course, which comes with its own dedicated bar, full restaurant menu, pizzas, pastas, and the like, seating for 45, and, of course, stunning sunsets. Now, if you're keeping track, Dan, the rooftop addition turns Riley into a three-story wonderland with the street-level restaurant underneath and a basement cocktail bar for secret subterranean sipping underground. But it's a party on the Riley roof tonight.
Oh, very good. It just speaks to Al Capone and, you know, things that go on in the underworld and all that type of stuff. High altitude, at least third floor. That's terrific. And you know what? Pizza
right.
gets my attention, not these places that, you know, just serve all this booze that you like. But go ahead.
That's my lane.
That's your thing. That's
well,
your thing.
Well, continuing with the parties, you know, this weekend, as a college football fanatic, I am beyond excited for tomorrow's U of A home opener. And doing justice to the full game day experience always includes the dedicated pregame, of course. And for that, you know, I really love Main Gate Square, all up and down University Boulevard. The Agave House recently opened on the corner of Park and University, which I think is one of the most exciting venues for tacos and margaritas and other U of A fan fare. See what I did there, Dan?
Yes,
fan
you did.
Fair.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Got it.
I also like no anchovies for a solid pregame pie, though. For the record, as an anchovy enthusiast, I'm not too fond of their name. But anyway, lots going on in Main Gate Square. Bear down, Dan. It's
going to be great. And having gone to U of A, that is a very fun place on game day. And I should mention it once
Indeed.
Again. I lived in the dorm built into the side of the football stadium, my friend.
So, oh, you were in that dorm?
That was me, and they had words. They had names for us. So, okay, and you have one more for us.
I do. Another opening that got my attention, particularly as a fan of the mid-century modern style, is Blush Restaurant. They just opened on 4th Avenue. Now, Blush is built on the nostalgia of the 1950s with a soundtrack that's full-on Elvis and the like. But what does the 50s decade look like at the center of the plate? How about deviled eggs, club sandwiches, pigs in a blanket, cheeseburgers? You know, and you got some ice cream sodas, root beer floats, and some retro cocktails. And really, just wait until you see the architecture, Dan. You're going to fully expect Ricky Ricardo to burst in and shout, "Lucy, I'm home!" So Blush is officially open for business. Why don't you just go check it out? It's going to be fun.
I got to tell you, in all the time I've been doing this with you, these are the three best you have ever put forward. I'm going to go check them out.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm checking them out.
I'm blushing. No pun intended.
Well, thank you, Matt Russell. You've set us up for the long Labor Day weekend. I really appreciate it, and it's always great to hear from you.
Have a great weekend, my friend.
Thank you. And to all of you, thank you for joining us today at Carew Pepperidge talking about AI. This is our time of the week to remind you that the Buckmaster Radio Program is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is responsible for the content of the program. Our thanks to Buckmaster Assistant Rosemary Brandt, producer engineers John Couch and Tom Fairbanks, and the entire team here at Bustos Media Tucson. Bill will be back with you next week.